So it just
I don't
appears
have three
online.
dots either.
Put
Okay.
your mouse over your face, over your own individual face,
Yeah.
and then you should see three dots come up in
And
blue.
even if you don't see three dots, hi, you guys. It's Lisa. I'm sorry I was late. If even and hello to Haley and James. Thank you so much for coming on. People are writing me. They couldn't figure out how to get in. I'm the chief program officer here. We have a new system. It's a little confusing. When you get the initial invitation and the reminder, it says here in there in little words, you know, register here. You can barely see it. We can't make it bigger. But when you click on here, you register, you download it or whatever it is to your Outlook calendar or whatever you have, and that's how you do it. And I know it's confusing and people are writing me, so people will be coming in. You right click on your box, forget the three dots, just go to your box and go to
Yeah, your
rename
name.
and then click, you know, write your community and then press OK. So I'm sorry, is Marissa on? Where are you, Marissa? Hi, your hair looks different. So we're going to start. I know. Did you already start? I wanted to introduce. Did you already introduce Debbie? Okay, terrific, you guys. Thank you for being so patient. As you all know, for the past year, we've been chaired by Marissa Gordon from Boca Raton at JFS at Home, and she's been a wonderful chair. And we decided that it would be so great if we could have a co-chair as well, because it's, you know, more fun. With more numbers, I guess. And Debbie Balk from Cincinnati has stepped up and stepped in to take on that role. So I want to thank you so much for doing so. And I didn't know if one of you wanted to introduce James and Haley from Navan, who out of the blue wrote me saying they had this fabulous training about vaccination hesitation. And I thought this would be really a great opportunity for us to hear this. So, did one of you want to introduce Haley or
So
James?
they actually shared that they can introduce themselves. We talked about it
Yes.
on
Okay,
their
terrific.
videos and everything. So with that, we'll hand it off to them.
Thank you all for
Hi,
joining.
hi everybody. And so we're going to be presenting today about how to use education to diffuse COVID-19 vaccine hesitancy. I'm just going to pass off to James and he'll start us off.
Perfect. So I'm James Cohen, originally born in Tel Aviv, live between New York and Toronto, Canada. Used to be a home care provider that we serviced Canada, United States, and some parts of Israel in the past. I sold that company three and a half years ago. And currently, I am a CEO of a company called Navon. And what we do is we do training for caregivers to make them better caregivers and to keep them in compliance with their state requirements. I also sit on the board of Home Care Providers of New York State and Brain Injury Canada. Reason that I thought this would be a really good idea to do is we set up in the Bronx 300 vaccinations for caregivers to come in, caregivers who go into people's homes, into elderly people's homes, and only 27 out of the 300 people actually showed up. When we did a survey and asked them why they didn't show up, the other 270 or so, the reason was, it ranged from very conspiracy theory, Google is hiding all the side effects of what the vaccination can do. And to the other end, where we'd rather see a lot more people get it before we do it. And all I kept thinking to myself is my gosh, how are we going to get past this pandemic if we don't get vaccinated? So decided to build out training, and we have a goal in the company that we're hoping to get 100,000 eyeballs, caregiver eyeballs on this training. We built it in a very simple manner. Plain language where they can understand, and we're translating into different languages as well. Haley will show you some of it later, and of course, JFS is more than welcome to use it for your communities as well.
Yeah, so I guess we'll start off by telling you a little bit about what Navon is, because you may not have heard of us before. But Navon is an education technology company, and we're based out of New York, Tel Aviv, and Toronto. We're kind of everywhere. And what we do is we help certify caregivers for their annual in-service training using our online platform. And we're using our, most of our caregivers, over 90% of them are accessing the content on their mobile phones. We really help to streamline regulatory compliance for home care and home health agencies. And as James said, we use plain language as much as possible to communicate with people, understanding that people are coming from different places. English may not be their first language. To that end, we have all of our training already available in Russian and Spanish, as well as English. And we are adding more languages all the time. The next two on the horizon, I believe, are Haitian Creole and Mandarin. And we use really foundational principles of instructional design. We use instructional video, gamification, and situation-based learning, which you're going to get to see a little bit of as we talk about vaccination. But for now, what I'd really like to talk to you about is why we're here today. I want to talk to you about vaccine hesitancy. So a lot of us, when we're thinking about vaccine hesitancy, what comes to mind is anti-vaxxers. And the reality is that most of the hesitation that we're seeing is not really, I never want to get a vaccine, but it's more about concerns around safety with taking a vaccine. And that issue, of course, it has multiple layers when we're talking about vaccines in general. So like fears regarding potential links to autism, which we know is now completely refuted, or learning difficulties, or chronic illnesses. But in this case, it's really mostly about the lack of safety testing prior to the approval for use. So we've just sort of discussed some of the basics of why there's hesitancy in the world, but we have to add another layer to that. In the case of COVID-19, many Americans are still not very trusting of the science because there was a lot of miscommunication and contradictory messaging at the beginning of the pandemic about things like mask wearing and social distancing. You should wear a mask. No, you shouldn't wear a mask. Everybody has to wear a mask. You don't have to wear a mask. This kind of communication didn't help with building trust. And in home care, we're dealing with an additional layer. In North America, more than half of our home care workers is comprised of BIPOC individuals. And there is research to support that the BIPOC community experienced systemic racism related to scientific testing, and that can further contribute to a feeling of mistrust. So to that end, we really must be aware of our employees' individual experiences when we're talking to them about vaccination. And at Navon, we really believe that better training means better care. And so this is one of our core principles, because we know that good education that people can really easily follow along with and internalize is going to result in better client and patient outcomes. So one of the goals at Navon that we have as a corporation is to give back to our community. And James is sort of humble. He didn't brag, but I'm going to brag for him. So when COVID first started, we donated a lot of PPE, and James even organized meals for frontline workers. And like he was talking about, they did a survey in New York, and under 40% of home care workers in New York said that they're going to commit to getting the COVID vaccine. And we know that education can really help. And we also know that the problem isn't isolated to New York, and that's why we've decided to start this initiative. So this is a free training initiative. We want as many eyeballs on this as possible. James mentioned our goal of 100,000. So there needs to be a multi-pronged approach to how we're going to encourage vaccination. The first part really has a lot to do with you guys and how you guys are interacting with the individual employees on your team. So if you're planning to have discussions around vaccination, I just ask you to keep in mind and be aware of employees' individual experiences, because they might be different than yours. And in just in the same way that when we're talking to our kids, we mirror them and we talk to them and try and get on the same level as them. That promotes that active listening and that mirroring. It promotes a feeling of being understood. And when people feel understood, they're much, much more receptive to having a conversation. And then the second piece, of course, is education. And that's where that mirroring can help open them up to what they're going to see in the education. So we're working with many different organizations to help reach our goal of 100,000 home care workers looking at this training. And so we're really inviting you guys to be a part of the initiative. And the objectives for the training are threefold. First, we want to understand how vaccination can protect yourself and others. Second, we do want to understand the potential side effects of the vaccine. And third, we want people to be able to answer frequently asked questions about the vaccine. because an educated workforce is also going to be able to spread the correct information amongst your clientele. So I'm going to take a moment now. I'm going to share a different part of my screen, and I'm going to walk you through a short demonstration. We're going to skip directly to the last objective. We're going to look at some of those frequently asked questions, and this is an audience participation bit. So, you know, unmute yourselves and feel free to jump in. But what I'm going to demonstrate to you is how we use what I like to call the sandwich method of teaching to help achieve learning objectives. And the sandwich method is really broken down like this. It's three parts, as you can imagine, because it's a sandwich. We ask students what they know, they show us what they know, and then we show the student what they know, or we expand upon the point or correct them, whatever the case may be. And this is really similar to how a teacher will introduce a new subject at school. So you remember when you were a kid and your teacher would say, okay, class, we're introducing a new topic. And then they'd walk up to the board and they'd start writing on the board all the things that the class is yelling out that they think they know about this topic. And then the teacher will turn around and say, great, this is what we know. Now let's talk about this some more. It's the same sort of thing. So this type of interactive learning through these short micro lessons results in a much higher retention rate of the information than a straightforward lecture or a video would. So clicking over here, can you guys all see this screen?
Yes.
Okay, great. So this is part of, this is the live module, and I'm sort of excited for you because there are members of our team who haven't even seen this yet. We just are putting the finishing touches on it. And so you guys are the first to see it. So we've got these seven frequently asked questions and we can pick any of them. So does somebody want to shout out a question they want to see the answer to?
Is it possible to spread COVID-19 after being vaccinated?
Is it possible to spread COVID-19 after being vaccinated?
Is it possible to still spread COVID-19 to others after being vaccinated?
So what is the answer to this, do you guys think?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. We're all educated. We know the answer is yes. We're going to click yes. And that's what the people do when they're taking the module and they move forward.
Yes.
So if they take no, what happens? Does the answer come up?
Yes. The same answer. I'll show you.
But remember, once you've been vaccinated, it usually takes your body a few weeks to build immunity to the virus. This means that you could still possibly get and spread COVID-19 just after being vaccinated. Even once you've had both doses and your body builds immunity, many experts believe that you may still be able to carry the virus and be contagious to others. Because the COVID-19 vaccine is so new, researchers are continuing to learn about the protection that the vaccine provides under real-life conditions and how long the vaccine immunity will last.
All right, so what happens in this lesson is we ask the question. We get the answer, whether it's right or wrong, we're always going to provide the correct information and then expand upon the point. So here we learned how you can still potentially spread COVID-19 after you get the vaccine. So then we come back to the screen and you have another choice. We can answer another question. Do you guys want to see any of these other ones?
Yeah.
Should you still wear a mask after getting vaccinated?
Okay, great. So let's look at this one. This one, let's intentionally answer it incorrectly.
Should you still wear a face mask after getting vaccinated?
So what's the wrong answer?
No.
No is the wrong answer.
Yes.
So we're saying the answer is yes. We show them they got it wrong.
Experts still need to understand more about the protection that the vaccine provides. This means that even after you have been vaccinated, it is important to continue taking preventative steps and measures like wearing a mask, regularly washing your hands, and staying at least 6 feet to 2 meters away from other people.
We have time probably for one more before I'd like to open it up for questions.
Did you get the vaccine if you have already had COVID-19? Because I've heard that.
That's a good question.
Should you get vaccinated if you already had COVID-19?
What do you guys think?
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Experts don't know yet how long the acquired immunity against COVID-19 will last if someone already had it. This means that the people who have already had the disease should be offered the vaccine. But if someone is currently unwell with COVID-19, they should not get vaccinated until they have recovered and they have met with the criteria to stop isolation. Current evidence also suggests that it's uncommon to become infected with COVID-19 within 90 days of the initial infection. This means that someone with a recent infection may delay vaccination until the end of that 90-day period if they wish. Someone who has had the virus and was treated with monoclonal antibodies or convalescent plasma will need to wait 90 days before getting vaccinated.
All right, so
will not need to wait 90 days.
Will. Yeah. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen now.
I meant the ones who, at the very end, they also have to wait 90 days. Those who have been treated with mono. Okay.
Yeah, after they have to be, they have to wait 90 days after.
Right. I know the original one, but I didn't realize the second. Okay.
Yes. So I don't know if that helped clear up some myths for you guys, but I think you like. Do you have any questions about the training or how we do this or what our goals are? Is there anything I can answer for you?
Can we access it from Canada?
Yes, everybody's going to be able to access the training. So we are going to be sending out a link to this committee so that you guys can access the training. You don't have to sign up for anything. It's just a link that you can send out and people can go onto a website and take it really easily. We want to make it as accessible as possible without any sign up or anything.
So how will you know how many people are getting this to meet your $100,000, 100,000 person goal?
James, you're on mute, hon.
Yep.
Sorry, we tagged the video in the back end that tells us how many views there are there, sort of like how YouTube does it, so we can see. Yeah. So yeah, we're excited about it. Just to let you know, I don't see Steve Barlum here. He's JFS Care in LA, and he's a client of ours. We donated a whole bunch of PPE to him and his agency back in March, I believe, and gave COVID training at that time for free to his whole community. So I don't know if you guys know him, but being Jewish, this is really important to us. When I was a home care provider, we serviced, I saw someone here who was from Edmonton. We did the Holocaust services for Alberta at that time, for New York State. We have a lot of training around that. So any way we can help, we're not a not-for-profit company. We are a for-profit company, but this cause is very important. So any way we can help, we're happy to help. And if you guys can spread it to your communities, that's great. I think the more people that watch it, the faster we can end with this pandemic. So it's sort of be a part of the social good and the solution, a small part of it. That's the goal.
Well,
so in doing it, would you rather share, like I have a virtual staff meeting next week where I could share it like you did, or would you prefer that we do it in a link and everybody can connect on their phone?
I prefer everybody watches individually. Do you have Debbie in your, I don't know if you call it agency, caregivers that go into people's homes or take care of vulnerable sector?
Yeah, that's all.
Yes. That's all you do, perfect.
That's all anyone in this group does.
That's what everybody does. So yeah, like, you know, it's great for us, but I think most of us are educated about this stuff. It's more for the carers, the caregivers who need this education. So if we can spread it to them.
Yeah. So I do a virtual staff meeting with all my caregivers once a month where we do mask training and, and all that kind of stuff. But I can also send it to them in a link in our texting. Yeah. That way they could access it on their phone.
Yeah, that would be great if you.
And we have other home care agencies who aren't on this call today. That maybe what I could do is send out the link if you send it to me, if that's what you'd like me to do, James. Or maybe we can come up with another way to connect with the network at large, because there are so many caregivers. I mean, our Holocaust Survivors Affinity Group, they're always going into people's homes,
and of course
that could be something that you could benefit
Of course, so
they could benefit from. It could be a win-win.
So yeah, we can talk about it, about how to best spread it out, but you know, the more it's spread out, the better. Like Haley mentioned, we have several organizations helping us spread the word, and we're grateful that you guys are listening to us and helping us spread the word to hopefully 100,000 carers.
Terrific. So someone talked about Russian and French. You have it in French. The course is offered in French, right?
Not French, Russian and Spanish.
Spanish, okay. And
Russian. Yeah, we are building in French. We might be able to get it done by next week. You know, from a business perspective, not many people have done this yet. So we want to go first to market with it. So we are going to launch it likely tomorrow or Monday. We just have to clean up a few things.
Okay, so just wait a bit and then you'll be able to get
it. Do it in French, exactly.
Teresa, you have a question?
Yes, so I asked the question about the Russian version. Now, is it a separate link or will they have access to, or the ability to choose the language with that one link?
We could do it where they can change the language, but then they would have to download our app. And I think that would be too difficult for them to do. Right. So I think it's better if we just send you a link for English, a link for Spanish, a link for French, a link for Russian, and then you do it that way. I think that would be the cleaner way. We did the COVID one back in February, March, and we forced people to download our app, and we saw there wasn't much adoption. Mm-hmm. They didn't understand how to download the app. They didn't know what they were doing. So I think this is a much easier way to get a broader reach.
Okay. That sounds terrific. So you can send it to me and I can send it out to everyone and we can put it in our resource library. Yeah. Well, I just feel like this was manna from heaven. I mean, really, they just wrote me on Monday and we had this meeting today and we were going to discuss it because Marissa and Debbie felt strongly that this is a big issue. So, you know, thank you both for coming. All right. Yeah. Any other questions? We're okay. We can say goodbye. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank right. You so thumbs much. Up.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'll be in touch.
Thank Teresa, you so no, much.
No
thank
time you. Frame. Teresa, there will be no time frame. You can watch it. It will stay online forever, per se. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much thank for this you. Incredible opportunity.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
I will say we've been holding town halls for the last couple of weeks, and they hit a lot of topics that the caregivers have asked. So it's a great training.
I'm so glad.
And it would be great if they could, I think it would be good, and again, different groups, but educate like case managers who are going into clients' home. It's not just the caregivers, it's, you know, anybody who's entering in hospice.
Right.
I mean, all of those things, it's important for any of those groups. Home care for sure, but.
Lisa, will you be sending us the links? Like, yes. How will we access it? Okay,
perfect. Yeah. I'll be sending the links, and they'll be in the resource library, right? I'm going to write in here, you guys, how you get into the resource library. I want you to cut and paste it and put it in your files, okay? That's what I'm going to do right now, so that you will always know how to access webinars, affinity groups, anything that is of interest to you. And just FYI, I know it's cumbersome and sometimes very difficult to navigate that. But if you filter by your affinity group and then you search in the search bar and you write something like whatever this is called, vaccination, you just write vaccination, everything will come up, right? So it's centered on the topics if you can't find it with the long list of resources that are in there, but we are getting a new resource library. But in the meantime, that's what you can do. Okay. So Marissa and Debbie, you take it over from here.
So Debbie, so I guess we have the loose agenda that we sent along with the reminder, and we can start by does anybody want to continue the conversation about the vaccine issue and any and resistance of caregivers or your plans for mandating, et cetera? I know there are differences among agencies. I can start. What do you think, Debbie? Should we continue since we already started with vaccine?
Yeah, we can start with that.
Okay. So I'll just start for myself and then we can go around. As of now, we're not mandating the vaccine. We sent out a short, very brief survey to our caregivers, asking if we mandate it, would they take it, and yes or no, and if not, was it a medical reason, a religious reason, or was it because they wanted more information? And I'm not looking at the results in front of me, but basically the gist of it was that they wanted more information, and there's a real distrust of the pharmaceutical industry. So anyway, we're not mandating it. If the Agency for Healthcare Administration in Florida made that a requirement for home health agencies to mandate for caregivers, we would have to, and then we would have to address this. But there will always be the exemptions, like there are in for schools and all that, for medical or religious reasons. So it's not something that's like 100% enforceable either way. We have been sharing information as we get it to help caregivers who want to access the vaccine know what's available in our community to try to get an appointment, which has been a huge challenge. Anybody who wants a vaccine, it's been hard to get one, but it seems to be improving sort of by the day. So that's
hard, is really hard.
That's where we stand. And then let's see if I can get a gallery view. We can go around. Debbie, you want to go next? And then we'll just go.
Here. Yeah. First of all, I think we have some new people here. So welcome.
Oh, perfect.
We'll get to everybody as we go around, but don't hesitate to speak up. So yeah, in Ohio, we don't have a mandate. We've talked with our HR department about whether or not we legally can require a mandate. It's pretty innocuous at the moment. Today, actually, about 50% of our caregivers so far have gotten the vaccine. Today, about 75% of that 50% got their second dose just now. Today, I was getting pictures while we were on the first part of the call. But that's mostly, honestly, our white aides. It's a lot more challenging with our aides of color. But because my manager, who is African-American, got it, she was able to encourage people to get it. And we found that was the best way, person to person, like, hey, this is why I did it. Talk to your doctor, you know, talk to somebody you trust. Luckily, I find, at least with our caregivers, that most of them have family members who are also already nurses or work in healthcare in some way. And so if their mom got it working at her hospital, you know, so it comes out better. So we've had, unfortunately, Ohio has done pretty well with this. We have a lot of places you can go and get the vaccine. But it's a challenge. I still have some that are, it's not just my Black aides, by the way, a lot of my Russian aides are also very cautious of getting the vaccine. So it's not just people of color, but something like that video at least is a step in the right direction of being able to people to do what they need to do or what we need them to do. So I'm gonna pick, we'll let everybody pick the next person. I'm gonna pick Linda from Pittsburgh because you're new to us, I think. I don't think I've met, at least I haven't met you yet.
It's usually Shawnee. She's on vacation this week. So you've probably met Shawnee Warden. Anyhow, so our model's a little different because our agency has we have a registry. Our caregivers are independent contractors. So what was interesting with us was we've learned a lot by the last few months. We were told that if they're not working in a facility, that they weren't going to be able to get the vaccine. They didn't really fit in any of the categories. So we became very proactive and basically went to every government official, the county, the city, and a health center, and somebody at a health center's mother's one of our clients, and she, at the last minute, right before New Year's, got us doses. And so we made a list, and we just figured, especially for caregivers that work in facilities, and we just assumed, this is great, we're excited, and we started, of course, making the phone calls, and nobody wanted. I'd say 30% of them were willing. But wait, by the way, unlike yours, our Russian caregivers were calling me, asking me when they could get it. So it was sort of different. And also our Black caregivers that are from the islands were also calling me wanting it. So it's just the African Americans that have basically been the most resistant. We don't have access anymore because we're doing second doses now. So, you know, the facility that's giving us the first dose right now, they don't have enough for first doses for anybody else, but we do have a wait list now. So more people are interested in getting it. We still have some who are resistant, and I have some who are refusing ever to get it. They don't get flu shots. They don't believe in vaccines, and you know, they're scared and they get no shots. So, but we're probably up to 60% now.
That's the whole point. What do you do about that? Isn't that the issue? What do you do about the people that aren't, not just you, Linda, but other people here, if they just don't get the shots? Can you do anything about it? Is it is anyone making anything mandatory or, you know?
We will, unless state laws are passed or something like that, there's nothing that really we can do. Okay. There's other ways that might encourage caregivers to get the vaccine, one of which is pressure from clients. So obviously, if it's going to cost them their job, not because their employer is imposing it, but because I have no shifts to offer them because every client is saying, only send me a caregiver who's vaccinated, that would be one way. I am highly skeptical of that happening because as long as the client is vaccinated, and then I have a feeling and the way that it's going in our communities, I don't think that's going to cause a lot of pressure. I think our clients have accepted the caregivers just with PPE. And I don't think that they, but you know, we don't know. That I just think would be one factor. But no, to answer the question, I don't know. There's no real way to enforce it.
Okay.
I have a question about what you just said about clients asking, you know, for people that have been vaccinated. How are you addressing that? Because does that not fall under medical, you know, their like medical rights and history of privacy or no?
I ask, we had that request starting to come out from clients, and I specifically asked our corporate HR chief officer about that. And she said it was okay to share that they hadn't been, that they had in fact been vaccinated, but you couldn't, if they wanted proof, then that was when it crossed the privacy lines, that they just had to take your word for it, you know, that they were vaccinated. And that wasn't against HR policy, at least for us.
But Megan, are you asking about HR policy or are you asking in general, how are you staffing if they only want vaccinated and they're not?
Oh, I'm asking about HR policy, just how that is even, we've had some requests and I'm in Louisville and a couple of us got vaccinated, but then anyone that hesitated for a second can't get an appointment anymore. So, but I am starting to hear the request. And frankly, we don't have enough caregivers that are willing to get vaccinated to even honor the request. But this is a new thing that we had, and I wasn't sure how people were handling that and what you can tell about, you know, the AIDS personal decision to do so or not to do so. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. Thank you.
Who is new on this call? Yeah, Christine, talk to us. And Andrea, so you talked to us about what's happening with you all.
Hey, so I'm going to be quite honest. I'm here today to visualize because I just started as the program director this week over at Gulf Coast Jewish Family Community Services.
Well, good luck. Look what you've got.
Yeah, to I've got a lot going on that I'm just trying to absorb everything right now. So you guys, I see that this is a very valuable resource that I have for information. But to be quite honest, I have no idea where we're at. I do know, you know, as far as I understand the state of Florida, it is very hard, you know, from an employment standpoint. I am familiar with a lot of employment law. I think it's going to be slim and hard to try to enforce that mandatory vaccinations at this point, especially given that a lot of the research from what I understand right now shows that it's more of a personal protection versus a protection to other people. So, you know, if I'm getting the vaccine and I can still spread it, who is it to demand that I have to get vaccinated when it has absolutely, you know, there's still a chance that I'm going to spread it to people, you know, outside myself. So I think that that's one of the legal hurdles that people are going to have to overcome. And I, quite frankly, I don't think they're going to be able to overcome that step, at least for this first round. I know there's a lot more research going into it and we should be seeing more changes coming out with the vaccines. So, you know, once it gets to a point as like, oh, this does protect you and everybody else from polio type thing, you know,
right. This,
you know, and that's the thing with new stuff, you know, it'll be 10 years from now before we get to the point where there's enough data and enough research to show. But that's just my little tidbit of legal knowledge that I have, how it applies to each specific, it looks like we're all from different states. So that's going to be, you know, you're going to be looking to state law to see whether you can make it mandatory with your employment practices.
Well, Christine, in the week that you've been there, you've gleaned a lot of information. So what about you, Andrea?
Well, we started actually vaccinating, registering on the 24th of December. We've had about 18% of our caregivers that had actually signed up and received the first dose. We had a little delay for the second, but things seemed to be moving. We're meeting a lot of resistance from caregivers wanting to get it. There, I think just the communities that we work within, there's a lot of skepticism. They're very nervous. They just don't want it. Teresa Baldwin, who's up on the screen as well, she's in HR for home care, and her and our CEO are working diligently on trying to pull some things together. I think this Navon training is going to be something that being able to push that out to caregivers is going to be extremely helpful. Right now, we of course are not making anything mandatory. That's not something we can do at this point. And we're just trying to encourage people, asking them why don't they want it. We're constantly doing the PPE reminders. We as well, actually yesterday I had 3 phone calls from clients. 2 said they don't want us to send them anyone until that they know that their caregivers are vaccinated. They wanted us to stop services. So we're starting to see a little bit more of that. Where they were once acceptant of people coming in with the PPE. Now that they know there's a vaccine out there, they're wanting to make sure they're getting the vaccine and still coming in with the PPE. So we're just seeing things change day to day and week to week as all of this is rolled out.
Yeah.
Oh, am I supposed to call on somebody
else? You can choose someone, yep.
Let's see. Elaine.
Okay, so we're not as far as some of you in the States. We have a rollout plan. Our community home support workers are going to be in phase 2, which will be in February and March. I haven't heard about any resistance to getting the vaccination at this point. I do have some clients who are waiting for service once our staff are vaccinated. I think what we might do if we do have people who are not wanting to be vaccinated, we may have them work with less risk population. So we may have, that's just an idea that popped into my head. Like if I have a complex care client, and I have a home support worker who's saying I'm not going to get vaccinated, I may not have her go to that client. And that's as far as we've gotten, but we're all looking forward to having it happen at this point. Oh, okay. And Tatiana.
Hi. Yeah, that was an interesting kind of discussion about if the clients can sort of encourage the workers to get vaccinated. I haven't heard anything from the clients yet, but just this week I had a discussion with one of the seniors buildings where we send our workers, and I had to advocate on behalf of the client to allow the building have their cleaning worker come on a weekly basis because they wanted to cancel all sort of non-essential services, what they call, and not let any people who help with cleaning or even cooking to assist the clients. So I had to negotiate with the building sort of a safety kind of or risk mitigation sort of protocol or agreement saying, just disclosing to that building what kind of clients that worker goes to, because we won't be able to send that worker only to one client. It's just 3 hours a week. It's just not realistic. I did explain the management that they need to feed their families. I mean, with 3 hours a week, it's just impossible to gain any salary. So so without disclosing other client's name, I had to ensure the building's management that the other seniors our worker goes to, they are all compliant with the safety protocols, and they stay home most of the time except medical appointments. So I kind of suspect that the next step in this negotiation might be requesting our workers being vaccinated, and that would be not by the clients, but the request by those buildings managements that we sometimes work with. So it's kind of good to keep it in mind and kind of sort of calculate potential next steps, how we can handle those situations. At this point, we have some workers who got vaccinated, others did refuse. We didn't push anything, but I agree with those who mentioned that sort of role modeling works the best. So to my coworkers who are direct home care, home support supervisors, or work most with the caregivers. So they got vaccinated right away. And one of them is Spanish speaking as well. And some of our staff is Spanish speaking too. So that worked really well, kind of as a personal example, you know, to like really show that nothing dangerous happened after, and they shared willingly any kind of feelings that they had after the vaccination, how they felt and how the process was. So that worked really well in that sense. So that's all for Edmonton. I believe, Natasha, you didn't speak yet, no? Yeah, okay, so maybe go next. Yeah.
Hi, everyone. I'm Natasha. I've probably been on the call a few times, but I work with Marissa Gordon. I'm the alternate administrator of JFS at home. And so I relate to what everyone's saying. We're all on the same boat trying to figure out the next step with getting caregivers and clients to get the vaccine. We were actually making some calls yesterday because we were given an opportunity by the state to get our clients vaccinated in their homes. And if their caregivers are present, or if they have children who live with them who are over the age of 65, they could get the vaccine when the state comes out, which is great because we've been getting a lot of calls asking for information on how to get the vaccine. And so as we were making these calls, we had an opportunity to ask who wanted to get the vaccine. And it was interesting to get these answers. A lot of the clients want to get the vaccine, and a lot of caregivers are torn, skeptical. Some said yes, and some really want to hold off. I actually had one question. I think Tatiana mentioned something along the lines of what I'm going to ask. Marissa and I were having a conversation trying to determine how many clients our caregivers see, because we do get a lot of requests sometimes from clients just needing services 2-3 days a week for a couple of hours. And so we know that these caregivers have to see multiple clients to meet their 40 hours. And so on the flip side of that, clients ask about exposure and limiting exposure and how many clients their caregivers are seeing. So it's a little complicated and it gets tricky. We're not enforcing that caregivers get tested every 2 weeks, but some caregivers are. So if caregivers work in facilities, they might be getting tested every 2 weeks. These caregivers might see clients in a facility, and then they might see some of our clients living in residential homes. And we have come to find out that someone is asymptomatic and then they get a positive test result, which they would have never known about if they didn't happen to get tested.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious to find out, we've discussed different things, maybe raising our minimum number of hours and putting minimums of how many times a week a client sees their caregiver, and explaining to families that the more hours caregivers work and the more they work during the week, the less clients they see, which would minimize exposure. But I'm just curious from a scheduling and what preventative measures are being taken to try to eliminate exposure from a scheduling standpoint.
That's a good question.
Yes, I think I've talked about it before. For us, we don't, anybody who works in a facility only works in a client in a facility. Uh-huh. Is in a private home only works in private homes.
Yeah. Banks and work chambers.
Because that's where the largest contagion concern really is from the facilities, at least here. Uh-huh. So that's been something that not every home care in our area does, but the clients seem to really like and respond to that. And that's usually enough because they know they're putting on clean PPE when they walk into their home, they're washing their hands, they're putting on masks, they're wearing face shields. So usually that's enough to calm their fears, just that they know that they're only going to private homes. And we also do require testing once a week. So,
okay. No difference. That's good. I don't know, Tricia, if...
So I have a question. Do you all get tested every twice a week, once a week, whatever it is we're talking about?
No.
I do because I go into our facility usually at least once a week, once every 2 weeks. So I go for a test every week, but we have a lot of free testing available here. That
I want to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to talk, although we have 3 minutes left.
Do you do the testing on site or do you send them somewhere to get tested?
So unfortunately, we have to send them somewhere. But again, our county where we live has free testing available every day of the week. And they usually get results within 24 to 48 hours. Some of them just go to CVS. Some of them go to Walgreens. But through our county, luckily, I'm able to send most of them.
Is it the rapid test or the PCR?
No, it's a PCR test. Okay. We don't really allow the rapid test.
Okay.
Because the facilities don't, so we can't, doesn't pay to send them for that.
So let's hear from Ardella and Tricia. Sorry.
Go on. For us, we've been really lucky. Our chief medical officer was able to work with the county and make Jessa our site. Jessa also has a hospice. So we have testing right at our building. And they put a tent out back so people aren't trucking through the inside all the time just to get tested. So that allows our caregivers to be tested. We strongly encourage it. If they work in a residential complex or a facility that requires weekly testing, then of course, the caregivers have to in order to stay on that case. But the tent, we call it the tent. The tent is open Monday through Friday. We really streamlined the process.
For a long time.
It goes through the county. So, it's not a cost to our agency, which is not right. Sustainable.
What about the vaccine?
When it comes to testing, Montgomery County, we live in DC, so it's or outside of DC, so it's really populated. The first rollout, there were appointments available starting, early January. But as you said, people were, especially the hospice nurses and social workers, they went for it. Our caregivers were less jumping on it, and now they've seen other people do it, so now I'm getting calls, hey, I want to get vaccinated. I'm like, so the county is good with the way we're registered. They send us out, okay, here's a list of available clinics for the week, here's a link, and they only send it to the 1AH, who's ever in line for it. But because of they've opened it up to seniors 75 and up, the demand is outweighing the supply of the vaccine, so that has slowed things down. And I would say roughly 50% of our caregivers have been vaccinated for at least the first dose. And there's probably another 10% that wants it that aren't available. And the agency has tried to pair with facilities, if you will, to try to get some spots for, our staff, Jessa and Premier. So that helped a little bit, but I think as things move over and they're just more vaccine available, that will increase our numbers. Pretty much our homemaking one, the ones you guys talk that, we see somebody every 2 weeks for 2 hours kind of thing, that's pretty much gone to non-existent because people either canceled in the very beginning if they were getting very little hours, maybe not just homemaking, but a few more hours a week. They pretty much took themselves out of the circulation because they didn't want a caregiver. We're seeing 1 day or 2 days, they didn't want a caregiver coming that was seeing other clients. So they took themselves out. In our homemaking, we've been unable to find a caregiver that's willing to do all those clients. So that's pretty much come to a standstill.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the vaccine and stuff. Did okay. I got the Pfizer.
So do any of you, because the Holocaust affinity group talked about this, and I was just looking it up right now in the New York Times, there was that opinion piece about, you know, the guilt that's associated with getting a COVID-19 shot when the seniors haven't been able to get it. Has anyone, anyone know what I'm talking about? Does anyone here feel guilty that they got it and their seniors didn't or their caregivers didn't? Well, anyway, that was a big issue for the Holocaust Survivor Affinity Group.
Yeah, pretty much only our forward-facing, meaning, you know, people with client contact or caregiver contact are the ones getting it, you know, up front. You know, right. Rest of our agency that don't come into the office or aren't forward-facing,
so they are not be getting this, it. This article, you know, says, get it, you know, it's, you know, responsible, you know, don't feel guilty, you know, you got to do what you have to do because, you know, you're trying to build herd immunity. And so anyway, just thought that was interesting. Okay, we still got Tricia. Let's hear Montreal. What's happening? We can't hear you.
Yeah. Hi, how are you?
Good.
To be honest with you, it's a very different model. Like I sort of mentioned in the past, right now, none of our workers have gotten vaccinated. The priority seems to be we provide only in-home care. So if there is an overlap, we don't hire anybody who is working in a residence right now. So we don't bring them onto our team. So all the workers right now are specific to home care. It's all managed through the Ministry of Health. So as much as we've been advocating with public health in order to get our home care workers a priority, it does. We could sort of argue, but it is managed through the Ministry of Health. So if by some chance a worker was already on our team pre-COVID and they were working in a residence and they got the vaccine, that's one way they got it. But anybody who's been hired through us, specifically through us, has not. We aren't getting much talk about it with the clients either or with the home care workers, maybe 10 in a handful. We are minimizing the amount of clients our workers go to, but we've also been very good at sending out updated home care letters to our clients as well as their families, letting them know sort of if you're continuing with the care, there is an inherent risk for accepting the care. We're doing everything we can to reduce the risk, but understand you have a role that you're playing as well in terms of what you are doing in visits and reducing visits. So I think there's an understanding of that.
I think that's a great technique. Are people doing that here? Sending out letters, of course. Yeah.
Okay. We just sent out our fifth letter the week of January the 10th. And we make it a point that the case managers address it with every client or their family member and make a note in the file that it's been received. So that way it sort of takes a little pressure out of us. We have workers who have tested positive more in this second phase than in the first phase. I have to say it was very quiet up until the summer. And then come August, September, we've had a lot more clients and a lot more workers who have tested because the kids are now back in schools. So it's presenting a very different picture. And we also have a curfew right now that everybody has to be off the roads and in home at 8 p.m. So we had to provide essential letters and documents to anybody who's working, who's traveling to and from. So it's an interesting reality we're all facing right now. That's for sure. Whoever thought?
None of us.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anybody else is seeing it. I just noticed it on the service we use for scheduling that you can now add a category of vaccinated on your scheduling, on our scheduling software. And it allows you to note like as a special skill, which of your staff and which of your clients have been vaccinated. I don't know if any of you have seen that yet, but we have it on.
I've been looking for it. I've been meaning to call Matrix and ask.
That's really important, I guess, for you all to know. You know, it's complicated. You know, it was always complicated, but now it's even more so. And I think you're all doing a yeoman's job of just trying to keep your head above water and help your staff and meet the needs of your clients. But it can be very frustrating, I imagine, if you have caregivers that just don't want to take that shot.
Yeah. So as we are getting ready to wrap up, there were some topics that we were not able to get to today. We wanted to discuss overtime, the impact it's having on your agency's budget, whether or not you charge clients for it, certain scenarios where you would charge for it, not charge for it. I know we all want to talk about that. And then the conversation about raises or bonuses or anything related to pay for COVID and you know, anything for their extra effort. I know I think we must have discussed, you know, whether we gave any kind of holiday gifts and things, which we did, but it's still not the same as an official bonus or increased pay rate. So I think we'll hold those topics for next time. And we'll see.
We had a few people who mentioned what they were interested in. I was just looking right now at the, not that many of you filled out the survey, but those that did, risk mitigation policy, human resource policy for caregivers, all things COVID, how to add and charge for case management within home care.
Those are great. I mean, we can definitely have a conversation about those things. I have plenty to share.
Yeah. So
somebody mentioned about HR also. I got something today that there's an NJHSA HR seminar about vaccines coming up like next week. If anybody who was on the HR.
I can put that in there too. It's on February 9th at noon. Yeah. And you can go and sign up for it by just going into the calendar, right? And the members only calendar, and you can do that. Or I can put it in the chat, however you want me to do it. Which what?
I guess put it in the chat.
Okay.
And people can just copy it now. Our HR team is participating.
I don't know if I can just put it in the chat. I can just tell you when it is. Okay. So I know we have to end.
You should have gotten an email because I know I got an email.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, here we are. But here it goes. Okay, so is there anything that anyone else wants to talk about? You know, we want to make sure that this works for you. So, you know, just let us know, right? Debbie and Marissa are all ears.
Yeah, send an email even if you think of something.
Okay.
We're here to communicate in between meetings. It's part of the, you know.
Do you want me to put that Facebook group in? I'm going to get everything for you guys.
Because I think the meetings, everyone has been happy to hear from each other and it's been very helpful. But I think if we also try to continue and.
Right. We have questions that can't wait until March.
Right.
You know,
okay, here we go. It's just for home care administrators, so it really is you guys, basically.
And I'll put an ask out before in the chat. If anybody has a great intake form that they love and are happy with, if you would send it my way. I'm revamping my intake form, my intake stuff. So I'll put that ask out. If anybody has one, I'll happily take a look.
Okay, and I'll actually take that also. We are also kind of taking a look at all of our paperwork and assessments and all that good stuff. So.
Yeah. Here, this one will work. Sorry about that. Okay, I know it's time to go. I'm the one who's.
That's also anybody who wants to share can add it to the resource library.
Yes, I wish you would. You just send it to me, and then I get it in the resource library. Hold on, I'm putting this in here the correct way, you guys. There you are. So, copy and paste that, or just click on it now, and ask to join if you're not already a member, and Megan will say yes. Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. Thank you
so much.
Okay. We'll be in touch on email. Bye.
Yep. Bye.